This week we're back with it's a bit newsier than post CES. It's still a bit of a lull in the tech industry. February with MWC, we're obviously ramping back up with all that. So in the meantime, let's dive into the past 2 weeks of news, with the most pressing, the most interesting, being on Tuesday, a report by The Information revealed that Google is working on a unified messaging app that, quote, brings together the functions of several standalone apps. Specifically cited were emails from Gmail, online storage to Drive, text with Hangouts chat, and Hangouts Meet video calling, as well as some sort of calendar integration. But the report interestingly noted how you would still need to open a standalone, you would still need to download the full app, have it on the device, and it basically just pushes you out. So those are the concrete details we know right now about what Google is working on for this unified messaging app. I know it's bombastic to say that Google has another messaging service, but in this case, it does seem that this is for businesses. And the best way to think about this is as a Slack competitor, and if you've had the fortune or misfortune of using Microsoft Teams, which is basically all the same thing. You have chat, you have video calling, you have a productivity suite, and it looks to be Google just wanting to have a comparable solution rather than have these five individual apps, which are all for productivity. So the case being made, is that it's an easier sell for Google if they just have one app to businesses. And as Slack users ourselves, what do you think, Kyle?
Well, one of the things that I found was, I made the connection as I was kind of walking today. I realized that they're already kind of stepping down this path of putting multiple apps onto one screen or into one view, as it were, like on the web interface for Gmail and Drive and Docs and all that. There's that sidebar.
Yes.
That right-hand sidebar that I feel like it's going to fill, it's filling a similar slot already that it, you know, yes, I'm on Gmail, but I'm also looking at my tasks, or I'm also looking at whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. They actually made a big, sometime after CES, they launched the ability for third-party apps to create add-ons that appear in Google Drive. Yes, it appears in Google Drive, Gmail, and Calendar. It hasn't come to the like Docs, Sheets, or Slides yet. So anyways, these G Suite add-ons, as they're called. That's a very good point that you bring up, because I don't think they've really done too much with that. It's still the same three apps that you can access, Keep, Task, and Calendar. I think what you're talking about makes so much more sense if they were just put... Honestly, most people would be overjoyed if they put Hangouts chat or just a text messaging in that sidebar. That would be enough for so many people.
Imagine if they integrated Google Messages with it too.
Yeah.
I mean, so to be able to be looking at Gmail and Hangouts chat and the text messages on my phone from my desktop in the same tab, I'll take it.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, this report revealed another interesting thing. It said that when Google works on these productivity apps, the G Suite team is almost exclusively working on products with enterprise customers in mind. And honestly, that explains so much, doesn't it? It explains why G Suite integration with consumer products sucks. How you have these weird overlaps, how you don't have assistant working with, if you have a G Suite account on your Pixel 4 phone, it makes so much sense, and it's a bit tragic.
So you make it, that's what I was going to say, is that it's the opposite is true for the consumer side of things. They don't focus on the G Suite customers when they're working on consumer products.
Yeah.
You can tell what was made for enterprise based on what works with G Suite.
Basically, that's a very sad truth. And I guess like behind the scenes, what people, what users, what consumers need to realize is how there's a real siloing of Google's like services. There's the G Suite, there's Hangouts Chat, there's Hangouts Meet within this enterprise vertical of Google Cloud. And then there's the consumer products, which you see with Google Duo and Allo previously, and Messages, RCS. That entire push is a different, it's completely siloed off from the what they're doing with the enterprise. And it paints this, it doesn't paint a very unified portrait of how everything is going on at the company, which is
unfortunate.
The sad truth of how enterprise business works. But yeah, this entire thing is designed for Google to get into the enterprise. And I would say there's a lot, most people that either via school or via work, they deal with these tools, Slack, Microsoft Teams. How do you think about using one application on your phone to deal with all this stuff?
I don't see how, I don't see how that application could, I don't see how the mobile application could be an improvement than having the multiple apps as it is, because what's different from opening my drawer and swapping to Messages or however the interface would work? I don't see it working on mobile.
Yeah, it's a design challenge, definitely. And what was interesting about today's report, Tuesday's report, was there was no mention yet of how all of this works on the web. There was only talk about a mobile app that's currently being internally tested by Googlers and was like silently announced to business partners in January by the Google Cloud CEO, Thomas Kurian. So yeah, this mobile app only, like it makes sense why the focus is on mobile, I think. Mobile is the future, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, is Google going to roll out this integration where either automatically, or it's telling consumers to turn off their Gmail notifications, or their cat, or their Drive notifications, all that, because that's going to be a messy, like the actual implementation of four different gigantic key services into one app is going to be an interface nightmare, and I don't know where Google's UX, their UI, how up to snuff they are right now. What do you think?
No, I mean, it doesn't make any sense, because any of the integrations I can think of that would make sense for them to be together, there's already kind of glue there for them to be together through Android. Like, I have a Hangouts Meet that I need to join that I have a link to from my email, or it's in my calendar from my email and it links to the Hangouts Meet app. I don't see how this putting it all into one app is going to make it any better than Android already kind of cobbles them together.
Yeah, because like the key thing is like the key productivity on mobile is a notification shape and all the notifications you receive. And what I'm imagining this unified messaging app is basically just a gigantic feed of cards. Maybe you can think of the old Google Now, in which you have just basically a list of notifications for your incoming emails, incoming messages, calendars, past new edits on a Drive, on the Google Docs you're working on. It just seems so, it has to have a really good design for this to be remotely coded.
And it needs to have integrations with other products, because people work outside of Google products.
Like Google's focus here is they want to beat Office 365. They want to beat, Microsoft's the biggest competitor here. And they want to stop this, like there's Slack, there's Asana, there's all these startups trying to do the future productivity. And Google, they own the free market with Google Docs, with Gmail, with Drive, all these things. And I don't know if the answer is associating less with those key apps that people know than just shoving it into one application. It's especially on mobile. It's a very big task, and I'm afraid that this is a rush to unification, a rush to simplicity, at the expense of not appreciating that people can understand complexity that they get switching between apps, even on the web.
Honestly, I'm worried about duplication of efforts too. Like, if a new feature comes to Docs, am I going to have to wait until that, or am I going to have to wait until that feature rolls out to this unified app as well? Is it going to be based on the same code? If it's based on the same code, what's the point of there being a unified app rather than having the separate app? There's a lot of questions that don't make sense. But I'm open to being surprised.
Definitely. And another thing, one thing that this report wasn't really able to confirm is how is this impacting Google's existing apps? The information report wasn't able to gather what's going to happen to those, to Gmail, to these billion user apps that people love and they love and understand. It's simple, it's free, that's why people use it. Right. So again, that's one angle to look at this. And another is, would we use it?
Absolutely.
Would we use it ourselves? And we've tried using Hangouts Chat, which as an organization, it's currently a backup after Slack. And it's fine. It works. The UI is a bit clunky if we want to talk about Hangouts Chat, if we want to catch up on using Hangouts Chat.
I mean, it does work. And that's all I can say that's good about it. It works. Yeah. And I guess it's good that it's so directly integrated with the original Hangouts.
For now. Before it gets killed.
Yeah. Of course. I just mean that a one-to-one conversation in Hangouts Classic is the same one-to-one chat in Hangouts Chat. I thought that was a really weird thing. Like direct messaging Steven and then seeing that same conversation in Hangouts Classic was a weird experience for me, actually.
Yeah, so the current rumors are it was supposed to already happen late last year, around October, November, but it was officially delayed to sometime this year. The transition for enterprise customers to move to Hangouts Chat. Google has laid out a roadmap of what they want to do, of features they want to add. And the general sense is that they're not going to push customers to Hangouts Chat until it's ready. So that's clearly what's happening here.
And it doesn't seem to have moved much. For as much as they seem to be trying to get people ready to use Hangouts Chat, it doesn't seem like much is happening.
I think it goes back to how good is the core product. It's just too clunky. Just like a minor complaint, if you've ever had the chat, if you ever used Hangouts Chat, there's a heavy emphasis on threads, and it's instead of just putting everything into the main conversation, it is nested threads throughout Hangouts Chat. And the organization is really, it wants you to find a thread and talk in that. And it's kind of hard to keep track of what's new, especially in the context of our running a newsroom. It's kind of hard to like look at everything.
Yeah, it doesn't make... Yeah, the analogy is closer to a bulletin board where... Mm-hmm. Slack is closer to an IRC chat.
Yeah, definitely. And it's Slack, for all its complexity, now looks like in comparison to Hangouts Chat, looks very simple. Again, we've been using it for ages, every day, day in, day out. But it is IRC. It's a good one. It's a good comparison. Google Chats, Google Chat, GChat in the past. It's clean and simple. And...
That name, I'm sorry, it's just...
GChat, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Nope, yeah, let's talk about that. What is this going to be called?
It could be G Suite. Imagine you just download one app that's called G Suite, and you have all of it. And it's just done.
Oh my gosh, I can see them. I can see them doing that. I can totally see them doing that. Gee, sweet.
It's just like buying the old days of buying Microsoft Office. You bought one Microsoft Office disk and you had all of Office. Yes, it was multiple programs, but it was Office. Same kind of idea, I guess.
Yeah, GC is solid. It's honest. It's. I can't wait for them to make up a word. They're going to make up a word. Like more realistically, they're going to make up something like Allo or Duo, and we're going to have a field day. And they're going to explain it away with one sentence about why it's called when they announce it, and we're all going to have a field day.
I'm just excited to see Ron make fun of it, whatever it is.
Yes, Ron Amadeo at Ars Technica. He chronicled every single chat service Google has had over the past few years, and I think he says this is the 10th, whatever this unified G Suite thing would be the 10th. And yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's just sad because sometimes there's not anything necessarily wrong with the product they put out.
Yes.
Like, there wasn't anything wrong with Allo, it just didn't have adoption.
No. And Google, they like doing new things. They're incent to a certain degree, their structure is incentivized to do new products, to release new products. And again, I can see why they think they need something to directly compete with Slack and Microsoft Teams, but I wouldn't underestimate people's capacity to, or even like, of how they currently work. It works. It's not too much of a hassle having Gmail open and Docs and Drive and that kind of stuff. Oh, wanted to introduce a whole new behavior to messaging with assistant and chatbots.
We'll have to edit this out in the other one, but could you go through all that again? You got disconnected.
Oh, darn. Okay, so yeah, it's generally Google just has this, they feel like they want to offer a new behavior, to offer a new paradigm of how to use technology with every single product they do. That was so evident with Allo. And like making assistant a core part of the experience and chatbots and all those assistive stuff. And again, I don't know if people are asking for that.
No, I don't think so. It's weird because I was just thinking, like, thinking on the consumer and the enterprise side of things. Like, the consumer side of things is really pushing this sense of ambient computing, which the enterprise side of things just absolutely isn't. Like, whatever this app is, it'd be the opposite of ambient computing.
So yeah, so I would describe Google Cloud's general, they want to make productivity, they want to use machine learning to enhance productivity to and in turn enhance people. That's the big push that I have spotted within the G Suite organization. And it's different. I wouldn't say they're in contrast to one another. It's just a very different visions of productivity and working more, frankly, and just having compute in the background. So yeah, it's so I guess we're expecting this to launch in April at Cloud Next, which is their Google I/O equivalent for enterprise. It's not meant for regular people. You'll use it in the context of your. I wouldn't even say if you would use it within your school. This is definitely a business play right now, but yeah,
Organization focused, yeah.
organization play. Yeah, so yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this ramps up, and I don't think there's going to be too much of an impact on how regular people use this kind of stuff. Like, I don't think there's going to be Gmail is not going away for regular people. Drive is not going away. This organizational structures, it's more the same, And this is like anything further is hedging on the fact that whatever this unified app is actually successful. So yeah, there's a lot to do going forward.
Yeah, I'm excited to see whatever it is.
Yeah, it's again like there's a huge design challenge here, and I'm genuinely curious how they bring together the five gigantic services and into something that works for users
on mobile. At that,
on mobile, yeah. So yeah, that was the big messaging story, and we have a bit of a grab bag of stuff in terms of the Made by Google front and just what their hardware division is up to. Let's start with Pixel Buds and you noticing that they passed through the Bluetooth SIG organization.
Yeah, so back at Made by Google, they showed off the Pixel Buds, the new Pixel Buds, which they aren't called the new Pixel Buds, they're just called Pixel Buds to confuse everyone.
Second gen. I think they're going to do a second, like parentheses, second gen.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Because there's a big difference between this, between these Pixel Buds and the last ones in that they are true wireless. Or so they are supposed to be, because the ones that we got to try, that our Ben got to try at Made by Google, were just dead prototypes, dummies.
They worked.
They worked?
One of them worked, yeah. It was a bad environment to find out, but they were working to some capacity.
I thought they were just testers that you could put in your ear and listen, and not even listen, but just like put them in and just like, oh, look, it fits.
So some of the employees had working units, like they were definitely just fake models, but the ones being handed out were functional to a certain degree. And again, it was in an open floor, so it was kind of hard to do a full test of all the capabilities.
I gotcha. Well, I stand corrected. So with that, we didn't get to get into the specifics of what hardware is actually in it. And now, thanks to the Bluetooth special interest group, where all Bluetooth devices have to be registered, we got a little insight into the type of chip that it's running on to know a little better what kind of things that we can expect. And one of the interesting things that I spotted on there was that it's not running a chip made by Qualcomm.
Mm-hmm.
Which by itself is, you know, okay, whatever. There's got to be a lot of Bluetooth hardware out there. But one concern that a lot of people are bringing up is the potential that these new Pixel Buds may not support the aptX. Yep. They may not support the aptX or aptX HD or any of those codecs.
Yeah.
Which is a very big deal in the audio, in the Bluetooth audio industry right now. Like that's how you make up the difference for the fact that Bluetooth is still Bluetooth and Bluetooth is not a wired 3.5 millimeter jack.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much the main revelation there, but it does show that Google is moving closer to this being a proper product release. I'd say the next telltale sign is when it gets listed with the FCC.
Mm-hmm, definitely. So yeah, this Qualcomm thing is actually surprising, because last year at last I/O, they made a big deal about more Google Assistant headphones coming to the market, because Qualcomm was releasing an SDK, the chipsets for Bluetooth headphones or Bluetooth wearables it's now supported Google Assistant, and it'll be so much of a more plug and play for the headphone vendors to release headphones with Assistant, with built in and all those kind of features like fast pair and showing up your last Find My device and all that. There was a big deal and push towards that. And it's odd that Google isn't relying on them to do this again.
At the same time, though, if you look at the Assistant smart displays market,
yes,
where every single smart display that you can buy except for Google's is made with a Qualcomm chip, where Google decided to roll with one from Amlogic.
Yeah.
So I suppose the same thing applies. Like, they make it easy for people to do it, or for vendors to do it using Android things, but they're going to do it their own way.
Yeah, that definitely comes to mind. So I guess the question is whether, again, like those Bluetooth audio codecs are a big concern. I wonder what advantage Google is getting out of this, because unlike, so the rationale for using their own chip, for using those AM logic chips and the CAST platform, was they were so much more familiar with iterating and building and developing using their internal CAST platform for the past few years. I don't know what affinity they have to this current approach to doing for headphones. Is the first generation Pixel Buds, did they base a lot of work on those first generation Pixel Buds?
That's a good thought, and one that I didn't actually think to dig into. That's interesting. I don't actually know what type of chip the original Pixel Buds are running on.
And the key thing to point out, that wasn't that was manufactured by a contract. ODM? ODM in this case. It wasn't filed under Google's FCC, and I guess it makes sense in the context of Google during those early, the second year of made by Google, haven't really unified all their hardware, and with post-HTC, post bringing in their own factories, that kind of stuff. So that kind of explains why those first generation Pixel Buds. But it's curious to see why they're striking it out on their own, so to speak.
Yeah, it should be interesting to see. I'm intrigued to learn a little bit more about the way that they work, and I mean the codecs. We could probably get by without those codecs, but there are people who are going to be reasonably upset about it.
Yeah, and so yeah. Again, the official guidance from last fall was spring, which starts Thursday, March 19th. We have a good bit before they should reasonably come. I think we're thinking I/O, right? Because that's May, mid-May is still well within spring.
Absolutely, and it's Google hasn't given us a like you said, they haven't given us any guideline on date other than that, where yes, they'll sometimes release devices outside of that launch window right immediately after a hardware event, like the HomePub Max release in September, right? With made by Google the following month. But that doesn't quite apply here because we haven't been given a date to expect.
Yeah. And I guess the running theory is that I/O would be a perfect two-product launch next to the Pixel 4a or whatever that mid-range device, which we'll talk about after this. But it's a while. And the reason I bring the date up is because tomorrow, January 31st, is when the Pixel pre-order $100 Google Store credit ends. And I know there's more than quite a few people upset that they weren't able to order or to have their credits, their $100 credits go towards the headphones. So that's a bit unfortunate, I have to admit.
To not even be able to put a pre-order down on it, yeah. I know most people would have done that, just applied their credit to that pre-order.
Yeah, and the funny thing, like the reason Google said they didn't put headphones in the box was, here's $100 pre-order credit. Why don't you buy that? You can use that credit to buy headphones. But they're not making it easy, are they?
No, they are not. I mean, there are more headphones in the store at the very least, but that's still not, they're not Pixel Buds. I don't think there are any true wireless headphones in the Google store right now. They're all either over
Jabra. Are those
true wireless?
No, they're not. Jaybirds. I'm thinking of the Jaybirds, and they're a neckbud style. So yeah. So what are you using for Bluetooth headphones right now?
Ooh, I'd go and get them, but they're just over there. I'm using the LG Tone Flex. I forget the exact model number. It's LG. It's a confusing one, but I'm using those. They have assistant in them. It's nice.
Neckbuds, right?
Yeah, it's neckbuds. It's neckbuds.
Like the Flex. Yeah. That was real. Well, we had a few generations of neckbuds, but I think they're going out. Yeah, they're pretty much winding down. in terms of who's releasing new ones.
It's in a sense, it's kind of too bad, but I guess it depends. I like them. I like them a lot. I like that I don't have to.
You can just keep them in there.
Yeah, I don't have to put them in my pocket. My pockets are full as it is.
Yeah. So yeah. Yeah. Okay. So personally, using AirPods Pro here, but the lack of assistant integration is not there. So I'm. I think there's going to be a week where I'm going to experiment using using both buds.
Could you do that? Can you have audio coming from more than one, going through more than one headset?
I guess I'd have to rapidly. I'd have to keep switching, don't I? Because if there's no active connection on the Pixel Buds, I can't maintain a system, could I?
Yeah, man, that's. I mean, if anybody could pull it off, it's you. But like, I don't think.
I think it's mad. It's a bit of madness. Thank
you. You have two phones. You have your iPhone for the music, and you have your main phone for the assistant.
Oh man! Oh, I could do that. I could definitely do that.
You got to have it styled. Like, you got to have them on opposite ends, just to really confuse yourself.
Oh, that's.
Wear an Apple Watch on your Android side, and wear the.
Hey, I'm doing on the Apple side. I'm doing that right now with the Moto 360.
You're in the Moto 360 and the Apple Watch?
Yeah, I'm a dual. If I'm not wearing Moto 360, I'm wearing a Fitbit with the Apple Watch. I'm a dual wrist kind of guy.
Like if you lifted your wrist to the camera right now, I would see one or two watches.
Well, I usually take them off a podcast, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There was a time when I wanted three, and I wanted to take that to three, but I. And have like a Fitbit and like a Wear OS at the same time, but I got rid of that foolish notion.
I don't see why you would need a Fitbit if you have an Apple Watch.
Because I have so many years worth of data in Fitbit. It's 8 years of data in Fitbit.
Holy moly!
Yeah, I started young. They got me walking, system walking pretty early. So yeah. Oh.
At least you'll be able to migrate that to Google Fit soon, right?
One would hope.
Fingers crossed.
One would hope. Yeah, actually, that's like, if I can just get that, that would be the best part of this acquisition between Fitbit and Google when it happens.
When it happens.
But yeah, when it happens. So yeah, as we teased earlier, Pixel 4. We do have some Pixel 4A news. 4A news. This mid-range phone. So the Google Camera app, late last week, there was a new version, 7.3. There was one minor UI change. They tweaked where the flash appears when you swipe down that menu. It's now the first item on the list versus the third, I believe. So you can just more quickly access flash instead of motion. Do you use motion? Motion photos, I think they're called.
I don't think so. That doesn't sound familiar. Wait, yes. I keep those on, actually. I do like those
nice.
From the time. Whenever I'm taking awesome. Like a picture of my like of pets or something, and they're just doing
something. Yeah, you know? That makes sense. Yeah. It's interesting, yeah. So I've turned those off. You don't find like the how much more data like the tiny video file to be a bit large. I try to conserve that personally.
I mean, it's Google Photos. It all just kind of.
That is true.
It all just kind of goes in there, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, in terms of hints that we saw what's coming, 34 frames per second video, which is something more cinematic and something that videographers watch. I'm curious how Google is going to surface that because they're notoriously removing settings. Like in the video app especially, they're more inclined to get rid of settings. Like the toggle for 4K is basically really hidden at this point. The recent revamp of the Pixel 4 just removed the obvious, it's now just called ultra high resolution video 4K in parentheses. So I'm curious how they're going to surface more settings in the app. Maybe this is the year that video gets a big push on Pixel.
Yeah, I mean, I thought, wasn't there already a way to change the, oh yeah, there is. Oh, it's auto and 20 and 30, I see. Okay, because you can't even choose 60. You have to hope that you're getting 60, okay.
Yeah, if you turn off the toggle, you get auto 30 or 60, but once you turn on 4K, it just goes to, actually no, it's disappeared for me.
Yeah, I know, that's what I was just looking at. I don't have 60 on, yeah. I only have auto and 30.
With on 1080p?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's again, like I can, again, one can see why Google wants to keep removing settings from the camera app, this simple, fast experience, but settings, sometimes you need settings, setting toggles. But the other thing, the primary thing of interest is Pixel 4a references. So do you want to start with just a brief, your excellent recap of what all the code names are and how they relate?
So there are four code names that we are currently watching, just in a general sense, that we have strong beliefs are Pixel-related code names. The first one is Needlefish, which we discovered last year as being something related to the Pixel 4. We haven't quite figured out what that one is yet. It's still existing, and it's still in the Google Camera app side-by-side with Pixel phones. We don't know what it's for. We don't know what it's... I mean, there's one rumor that we've heard about, maybe, but nothing's really panned out on that one yet. Mm-hmm. Other than the fact that it's running a Snapdragon 855 chip. So that immediately discounts it as being any kind of Pixel 4a. Just throw that out the window. So the new ones that were discovered recently are Redfin and Bramble and Sunfish. So Redfin and Bramble, we found are both running on, or as discovered by XDA, it's all been discovered to be running on the Snapdragon 765 chip, which is as we learned, all the most recent Qualcomm chips, including the 765, are 5G enabled phones right out the box, which is suspicious to say the least, because the 765 is basically one step below flagship. Right,
yeah.
The 7 series is So that's that. So, and then Sunfish is the last code name that we found, which is running on the Snapdragon 730, which is a 4G enabled phone instead of a 5G. And all four of those code names were all found within the Google Camera app, and it's kind of throwing our guesses and suspicions on the Pixel 4a into question. Really.
Mm-hmm. But you do have your strong candidates for which.
My personal opinion, and this is just an opinion, this is just a guess, I think there's only going to be one Pixel 4a. There's not going to be an XL variant to go with it.
That's sad.
And that would be the Sunfish.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be running on the 730, which is a nice, healthy step up from last year's
675, I think.
Yeah, whatever it was that's in there. Some
math. It's proved it doesn't matter.
Yeah. It's all about the camera. It doesn't matter what kind of chip it's got in it. If it's got a decent battery and it's got a headphone jack, which we know it's got that, and it's got the camera, that's all people care about. So I'm thinking Sunfish is going to be the Pixel 4a.
Mm-hmm.
But that then leaves a whole lot of questions about why is Google working on a 765 device?
Mm-hmm.
Because year after year, their Pixel phones, the flagship Pixel phone, has been running on a flagship chip, which we would predict to be the 865. So if there was going to be a Pixel 5 this year, which why wouldn't there be? Mm-hmm. It should be running the 765 No, the 865.
The 865.
The 865. But here's Google with two phones, presumably a small and an extra, an XL, presumably, running on the 765, which is a healthy step downward. I don't know. Are they launching another mid-range or an upper mid-range, or are they scaling back the Pixel line to be like the Motos?
This seems like would be a drastic step that they would be taking in partitioning their lines that I feel like would have been rumored, would have been, the tea leaves would have been very much more clear than they are right now if they were going to do something crazy, if they were going to drastically reshift their line and break away from a mid-range and a flagship. But yeah, the code is, it's been puzzling. It's harder this year to truly determine what is what. And I think I do agree based your look at everything we have so far, Sunfish does seem like the most likely candidate here in terms of the specs, and not releasing a crazy expensive phone, which would be, right, it would be hammered, a 5G phone, from the connectivity networks, from the state of technology. This is something, it doesn't make any sense, especially for something coming out in May, and Zoom announced in May, launching very soon after in the same month or same day. If we were talking about a phone launching at the end of the year, this would be a different, the timeline would be so much more different. But I think 5G phones are premature. Again, we haven't had Samsung do their launches come next month and March, but I think it's premature for a mid-range phone that excels at being affordable and that gets good battery life and that isn't weighed with these 5G radio, 5G chips. You don't want to ruin your winning formula that you had the 3A last year.
And it's entirely too fast of a turnaround for anything we've ever seen from Google before.
Yeah.
They don't put out a phone based on a chip that was only announced 4 months ago, mm-hmm, by that time, like, or 4 or 5 months ago. Like that's too fast of a turnaround for them. Like by the time we get the a Pixel 5 with the 7 or 865, it'll have been almost a year since that chip was announced.
Yeah, and one could argue that Google needs that time to really optimize the experience.
Absolutely.
The Pixels launching late in the year are solid phones. They're software tuned, and that's what most people care about rather than hard specs, especially with what these hardware chips are really getting you at this point. There's still incremental improvements.
Right. So, and you got to know, while Qualcomm has a solid reputation these days, there have been times where chips were bad. There'd just be a bad batch of chips one year that ran hot. Like I can't remember off the top of my head which one I'm thinking of, but I had a phone that just ran hot because it had a bad Qualcomm chip in it.
So that generation where the HTC One went with the Snapdragon 600, I believe, and there were very few phones with the 800 tier that generation, I believe.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah. That sounds about right. Things just ran hot, and giving that lead time of, okay, hey, that chip doesn't work that well, what can we do quickly to snap something back into place? Google's famous for it at this point. Like the Pixel C, they swapped all the software out on the Pixel C. The Pixel Slate was delayed, or was, I don't want to say delayed, Pixel Slate was completely revamped when Intel had production issues. That Google's keeping a solid pace to be able, mm-hmm, to make sure that they have time to swap anything out if they need to. So for something with the 765 to come out or even be announced in May would be unheard of from them.
Yeah. So yeah, May. Last week, we got the IO dates. They are the 12th to the 14th in Shoreline at Mountain View. And by all indication, we do expect them to launch when their mid-range phone and maybe their headphones at that event, that gigantic event. So it's going to be another big mid-year launch. Before we move on to our next topic, I do want to touch on Android's new Flash tool, which makes it easier to try the latest AOSP build on your Pixel phones and a development board, the high-key development board. But Kyle has all the deep dives on that.
Right. So this week, Google released the Android Flash tool, which uses a new technology that Chrome has been working on for a couple of years now called WebUSB.
Yep.
Directly gives a website access to a USB device, which is a scary thought just by itself. So just to be forewarned, if you go to this website and you have a phone plugged in, but it's not the phone you wanted it to be or anything like that, it's not just going to immediately take over. You have to explicitly give the site permission to be able to access your device. But once you do that, it becomes possible to take your Pixel 2 or newer phone and flash onto it the latest version of Android, fresh from the Android open source project code base. This isn't a build that they've been refining on and putting the Google niceties on. This is just fresh off of right off the developer's keyboard, built and put onto your phone, which is of course a very dangerous thing to do, but it's worth it if you are a developer who's trying to keep up with the changes that are happening in Android 11.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting that you could just plug in your phone and it'll pretty much wipe all your data and put on a new, pretty much anyway, put on the newest and latest, greatest Android 11, in quotation marks, Android 11.
Yes, it is important to point out that, yeah, you're working with really rough stuff here. It's not something that it's not for regular people. Let's just put it that way. No. As most tools are. And yeah, it really makes the idea of Chrome OS development so much more powerful.
Yes, that was a thing that thank you, that I completely forgot that. It makes it possible to flash AOSP onto your phone from a Chromebook without using Linux apps, without installing ADB, the Android Debug Bridge. You don't need to install anything like that. It just works right from the browser, which is incredible. Wild to me.
Yeah, it makes the idea of having a $1,400 Pixelbook Go 4K worthwhile.
The Pixelbook Go is not a development laptop.
Yeah, but why does it exist then if not for the Googlers who want the top experience?
Beats me. I think it's for Stadia. When Stadia decides to launch 4K on the web one day,
yeah. So yeah, yeah. Speaking of Stadia, we do have a quick wrap up of that news actually. Stadia Pro Games, Guilt, and the other one, Metro Exodus, is what's coming out on Saturday, which is a good day to get new games, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Yeah, so yeah, those two titles. Guilt is really surprising, isn't it?
Yeah, this is actually, I would say, one of the best months of Stadia Pro Games we've gotten. I mean, give or take, I really do enjoy Rise of the Tomb Raider, so that's, you know, give and take. But these are new titles. These are hot off the presses titles that you are getting for free with your Stadia Pro membership. Maybe it's an incentive to keep your Stadia Pro membership a little bit longer than after the, let's say the 19th or a couple days after, whenever people's memberships start running out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah. And Metro Exodus is just not too flashy a title, but it is there for people.
Gritty, dark, gritty. People like that kind of thing, I guess.
Yeah. Visceral. Gritty, dark. So yeah, there are some Stadia Pro deals to announce at the same time.
Yeah. Yep. They got going off the top of my head, I want to say they had right Mortal now Kombat. On sales, Mortal Kombat 11 is 60% off, including the DLC packs or DLC pack singular, if you wanted to get that on, which for as good of a game as it is for that price, that it's worth it. But that's on sale. Just Dance 2020 is on sale, 40% off, as is.
Have you bought that yet?
No, I haven't. I had no plans on. I mean, now that I know how it works and that it, I was mostly just curious about it to see how it connected, which now I know, oh, the phone is connecting to the server. It's actually the closest equivalent to the Stadia controller that we have that isn't the Stadia controller. The phone is connecting to a server. Not the server, but it's a server. Mm-hmm. Not the Stadia server, but it's Ubisoft's.
Yeah. So yeah, and
then
yeah, it's a cheap title.
Trials Rising though is definitely the best deal that they've got there. For $10, you get Trials Rising. That's worth it.
Motorcycle racing. Yeah, I guess that's
it's not quite racing as much as it's like tricks, kind of. I don't know how to put it. It looks like fun. I haven't actually played it, but it looks like fun, especially for $10. Like, I'm still thinking about it. I almost want to like look and see how much credit I have in my Google Play account.
Mm, okay, that's fair. So yeah, and another thing that was announced this week was Google for Games Developer Summit at GDC 2020 in early March. So we do expect Stadia to have a presence there. And this is the optimal environment to obviously talk to game developers. So it does seem likely that they'll be making a presentation there along with the other parts of Google, suited for like Google Play Games and Google Cloud and Firebase, presumably, for game development and that kind of stuff. So early March is going to be when we should expect to see Stadia news geared towards developers. I think that's the best guidance to expect as the consumer stuff was already announced at the beginning of the year, obviously.
Which is a great thing, I would say. I any kind of news that pushes Stadia to developers is a good thing. Now, it does mean that people need to start thinking about Stadia in the long term. That these developers that Google is pushing to are not going to have their games out by probably maybe not even by the end of this year.
Mm-hmm. Those more AAA title games, I'd say.
Yeah. Where what's really going to be good is when we start getting indie developers in, which is what I hope that they're going to be appealing
to. Yeah. And those 10 new games for the first half of this year, correct? Is that the guidance
again? Yes, that sounds right.
So that's rounding out gaming Stadia news this week. So just some quick hits. Earlier this week, Google previewed a transcribe mode for Google Translate, which is basically you can think of it as Pixel Recorder, but real-time translation in a similar text and rowing UI of rowing. Yeah, a rowing interface, swiping interface. So that's going to be coming soon. And Google earlier this week also posted their Super Bowl commercial featuring assistant and photos. It's a real tearjerker in the style of their Parisian Love ad, which is 10 years old now, which basically a person searching about how to do major life events as they grow old. It's kind of good. It's very good, actually, and they posted this year's, so we can expect that this Sunday, Super Bowl, the big game.
Is it really this Sunday? Oh my God! Where? What planet?
Yeah, Yeah, and Saturday is February, and that's insane. Fooey insane how time is rushing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of rushing time, that is our podcast for the week. You can tune into Alphabet Scoop on Thursdays, and you can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play, still, unfortunately. And you can even listen on our site at 9to5google.com. Thank you for tuning in, and thank you to Kyle for joining me. And until next time.
See ya.